This is a production of Cornell University.
Good morning or afternoon. Sorry, everybody. It is 4:34, and I'm calling this meeting of the University Assembly to order. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Jim Blair, chair of this year's assembly, and for all our guests, welcome. This is a public open meeting. Feel free to take photographs. If you have comments or have questions, let us know. If we have time, we'll work you in. But in general, it's a meeting to be observed. Are there any late additions to the agenda? Hearing none, I ask for approval of the orders of the day and move to approval of the minutes. Are there any changes or amendments to the minutes of March 10th, 2015? They were provided to you prior to the meeting.
Motion to approve.
Second. Discussion? No changes? I ask members unanimous consent to approve the minutes. Are there any objections? None noted. The minutes of March 10th, 2015 are approved. Next item, Executive Committee and Constituent Assembly updates facilitated by Mr. Battaglia. Mr. Battaglia.
Thank you, Chairman Blair. There are four items to report today, the first being that we have received a letter from President Skorton proposing the reappointment of Charles Walcott as the University Ombudsman. We will tackle this issue at our next meeting on April 7th. Likewise, we've also received a letter from President Skorton to seek reconfirmation for Mary Beth Grant as Judicial Administrator. Both Mr. Walcott and Mary Beth Grant will serve two-year terms if confirmed. Also, congratulations to the results of the undergraduate direct University Assembly elections. Myself, Matthew Battaglia, and Matthew Indemini have been elected to serve next year.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And finally, the Outdoor Space Working Group has submitted his recommendation to President Skorton. It is recommended that this assembly should follow up with him at some point next term. Thank you.
And, yes, was chair, because I turned in my report.
Correct.
Sorry, say that again?
Chair?
No, not yet. The report has been given to the president. It will be up to him to release it when and however he chooses.
Are there any other updates from either of the other assemblies?
One from me. I will be leaving Ithaca actually for the month of April and May, and so we're figuring out what will happen if I vote as president, but I will be stepping down as ranking member. The graduate students and professional students have nominated Cora to take my place as ranking member on the university executive assembly for the remainder of the term.
Very good, and without objection. Are there other assembly reports? Sure, if you have something that we need to...
The main items were, of course, the support of the spaces for the question and answer session with the president and the provost of the budget, and particular concerns of how it's being administered, that is the implementation of the various budget cuts in the college and how budget costs are level. As I mentioned already, there was also a resolution on faculty staff participating in meetings outside of Long Island University. And I mentioned that because this committee would be out of balance with that particular resolution because we have that.
Can we ask for a copy of the approved resolution?
I guess that's yes.
Thank you. Other items? Hearing none, turning to the business of the day. First item, confirmation of A. Olison to serve as the AY 2016 Judicial Codes Counselor. Ms. Bailiff, do you wish to introduce the motion?
I do. I motion to approve the appointment of Mr. Bola Olison to serve as Cornell University Judicial Codes Counselor beginning in the academic year.
Do we have a second?
Second.
We note the second from Mr. Grant or Professor Randy Wayne, Chair of the CJC. Discussion, Ms. Bailiff. We turn the floor to you for 5 minutes.
Okay. So the committee that chose Bola to take on this very important role included Jody O'Grady's office, Kevin Claremont, and Nathan Deal, Brendan O'Brien, Amanda Minnesis, Emily Sampriccio, and Brian Jones. gave the brief for the committee, which was intense. They received about 30 applications for the position. Every applicant received cover letters, resumes, and writing samples. Brian Jones and Emily interviewed all students, narrowed it down to 8. David and Amanda joined the interview process, narrowed it down to 4. And then the entire committee narrowed it down from 4 to 1. So this is a very selective process. And we are so impressed with everything that Bola has to offer. He's extremely athletically qualified and very involved in various aspects of the law school. So let's say
anything else? Members have the appointment for President Skorton in their package, as well as a abbreviated resume from Bola with them. Is there further questions or discussion from members on the floor? Hearing none, I move the question. All those in favor of approving the appointment of Bola Olufsen to serve as the JCC for AY216, please raise your placard. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I have 9, 4. Any against? Seeing none. Abstentions? None. The motion carries. 9-0-0. Congratulations. Yes, next item up to for discussion is for intended disposition, meaning vote, UA Resolution 5, support for the Office of the University Ombudsman. This was introduced to members at the last meeting. It was in your packets and read-aheads for this meeting and is in your packet for today. Mr. Battaglia, do you motion to bring UA Resolution 5 to the floor for a vote? Is there a second?
Second.
I'm sorry?
Second.
Second for Mr. Burkhoff. Discussion. I turn the floor over to Mr. Battaglia for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Chairman Blair. This is a brief to bring back the University Senate Resolution 5, calling for the creation and funding of a one full-time appropriate position for a new associate ombudsman. As you can see, this is by part-time at the university. Ombudsman office has seen a very large increase in the number of visitors they've had over number of years. They believe that they will be able to better serve the community. We echo that by hoping that they receive an additional ombudsman to enable additional flexibility, as well as enabling a more competitive retention of employees. And right now, a half-time employee generally will be trained here and then will be hired away to a full-time equivalent in another university.
Questions from members? I would note that I have been in contact with the university. They do not object to the creation of an assistant ombudsman subject to the availability of funds, which is up to President Skorton. The university did not want to bring somebody here to give any counter view to the resolution. Is there any further item for discussion on this resolution? Then it is properly before you. The motion is moved. All in favor of approving UA Resolution 5, support for the Office of the University Ombudsman, please raise your placard. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I have 8, 4. Against? Abstentions? I have 8-0-1. The motion carries. Thank you, Mr. Battaglia. Next item on the agenda, UA Resolution 7 for disposition, meaning vote, calling for the implementation of an open course evaluation system. Mr. Battaglia, are you motioning to bring this to the floor for debate and disposition?
So motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
From Ms. Batista. We recognize Mr. Battaglia for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Chairman Blair. Here again, we're bringing for you UA Resolution number 7, calling for the investigation of just to briefly answer any questions, this is a resolution calling for the creation of a working group of various academic relevant academic units at the university to discuss the pros and cons of the current course evaluation system, as well as to consider possibly moving to a multi course evaluation system as has been done at other universities. It is not calling for an opinion either way, it's calling for investigation in what room there is for improvement. I yield the remainder of my time to the chair for questions.
Thank you. Are there questions from the members? Mr. Walters.
So, I think we're just the fact that we should stop the carry for a few minutes. Those seem to be the title of the resolution. Those seem to call for the implementation of an open source project as opposed to the creation of a working group from that state. So, that's kind of the name of the resolution.
So, where is that?
I hope the resolution that you can change. You can change the title.
So, there's a motion before us to call for implementation of an open course.
An open course evaluation working group.
To evaluate.
Can I get a reading of the wording that under consideration?
I propose calling for implementation of an open course evaluation working group.
Okay, is there a second to that amendment? All in favor of changing the title to calling for implementation of an open course evaluation working group? I note unanimous consent. Are there other discussion of the resolution itself? Ms. Batista.
I just think it would be helpful for the audience here in the University Assembly to explain the process that you've been through so far, as well as what's happened with Student Assembly Resolution 29 and why you're coming to the University Assembly now.
Yes, we passed Resolution 29 in the fall. That was going to take place before things 23-2. This was something we've been working on at the beginning of the year. It was deferred multiple times by the President and the Provost. I've since met with the faculty, the chairs of the Faculty of Arts and Sciences, with the provost, with folks like Dean Ritter in Arts and Sciences. The fact that we should have an open, a system to openly access syllabi that's uniform across college, across the university, no one's denying that on any level, whether it's the provost, the deans, or the members of individual colleges. We have a system like the one that we're aiming for, it's already implemented within Cal's Hotel and Engineering, and every other Ivy League school in some manner open for evaluation system. We've been working really hard to get it through. The state's right, nature, right, of our university has made it tough. They say it's centralized, through the centralized eight times over, it's very hard to climb eight hills instead of one. So we're bringing it forward. The original proposal, again, just the implementation of a working group to discuss this with all stakeholders.
Did that answer the members' question?
Yes.
Other questions? Seeing none, the question is before you and moved. All in favor of approving UA Resolution 7, calling for implementation of an open course evaluation working group, please raise your placard. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. I see 12. 4. Against? None. Abstentions? Motion carries 12-0-0. Thank you, Mr. Battaglia. Next item on the agenda is for introduction, not vote, of a package of two resolutions that work in tandem, UA Resolution 9, Community Bill of Rights Resolution, and UA Resolution 10, Charge to the Community Rights and Responsibilities Working Group. Ms. Balick, do you motion to bring this to the floor?
Yes.
And do I hear a second?
Second.
From Ms. Batista. Ms. Balick, we recognize you for 5 minutes.
Okay, so the Judicial Code Counselor's Office and some members of the Student Assembly were talking at the beginning of the semester about how to establish the Community Bill of Rights so that everyone on the campus can understand what is expected of them when they're at the university and also what they can expect the university to expect from them. So, you basically want to clarify rights and responsibilities for everyone. And the process that we underwent to get here included many internal discussions, reaching out to the leadership of all of the constituent assemblies to try to figure out what they would like to see in the Bill of Rights. But what's before you today is not a draft of what this bill looks like. majority, it suggests that under the CJP, there will be established a community rights and responsibility working group. We'll have stakeholders from all of our policies and all constituent assemblies and constituent groups on campus. The idea is that this working group will draft the Bill of Rights, and they will also be responsible for convening in order to discuss how to make their policies more consistent and congruent to each other, and this will prevent any tools in the university's judicial process that you might be seeing currently. Also, Resolution 10 calls for something that should be pretty easy to establish now, some sort of website where all university codes and policies can live, even if it's just hyperlinked to all of the individual policies, which are housed on their own individual websites. It'll make it easier for students, faculty, staff, and everyone at the university. It's very easy for them to locate exactly what is expected of them. And at the moment, all of these policies are in different places, so it can be even more confusing than it needs to be. That's the basic gist of this. I hope there's questions, and I would just like to remind everyone that we're talking about establishing this role through CJP and empowering these groups of people to work together is through policy at Cornell. We're not talking about necessarily yet what would be in this community.
We really don't know what you need to do.
Well, the Bill of Rights, we have kind of been working on the draft. The best example is this is actually a Resolution 79 that passed in 2011 by the Student Assembly. It was essentially a Bill of Rights. They held like a constitutional convention where they talked about what they wanted to see in Bill of Rights. That was a student Bill of Rights, right? It wasn't a student, staff, faculty, community Bill of Rights, which is really what we would imagine this to be. It was passed by the Student Assembly. Today the president's important, somewhere in the email chain or the cyber world. We're not really sure if a response to President Fortin was ever submitted back to the students. The students who submitted the resolution graduated. He passed this resolution off to another student who was supposed to get the Bill of Rights ratified by the UA, Faculty Senate, and GPSA and Employee Assembly before it was established. Which is interesting because it would only pertain to students anyway, but that student never followed up. It fell through the cracks. There's no paper trail, so we don't really know what happened, but basically the draft that we have now reflects on the language from that part, but really it would be up to this working group with all of the stakeholders to decide what are the rights that we all want to have. And they also would have the ability to propose like appendices. So like Amanda and Juliana and I were talking about in our presentation a couple weeks ago, they would be able to say, you know, we think that a lot of people are confused about what their rights are when UCD approaches them on campus. So how can we write something that clarifies this and is relevant for students, staff, and faculty?
We are about the end of the time of the introduction. It is my intent to, pending members' approval, to ask for comment from the JCC, the JA, the Office of University Council. Obviously, I'll send it to the Office of the Assemblies and to the EA, Faculty Senate, GPSA, and SA, asking for if they want to provide comments at ostensibly the April 7th meeting is my guess, but it will depend on when we decide to take up UA Resolution 6, which will be decided later in this meeting. So, depending on it, so in the April meeting, we intend to bring this forward for a vote if we can, but there are a lot of voices to coordinate with, and it's unclear to me yet whether we can get their more formal responses before April 7th. So, if not, we'll come back to you with a plan B by April 7th if we can't actually achieve bringing it to the floor for a vote at that meeting with all sides represented. Are there any other comments or questions?
Sure. Will you open it for public comments
Yes, in fact, if assuming members don't object at the end of when we end this item, we will put it up on the university website as early as tomorrow if the technology doesn't have a hiccup. Mr. Tegley.
Just a brief question. I think it might be a typo, but Resolution 10, line 28, it says, "The final result of this committee shall be responsible for." Is that intended to read working group?
Okay.
Line 28, our
I think that's
working group.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think
okay. I wanted to make sure there wasn't confusion between CJC and the working group, or that you may be trying to create that.
Yeah, the reason why we wanted it to be like that is we kind of wanted it to be like a subcommittee of the CJC, a subcommittee generally in size, and make smaller, right? You want it to be bigger. So I decided to call it a working group, but technically it is a committee of the CJC.
I think this is the whoever gets involved in this, you have to actually do a detailed analysis.
So, I'll send this out tomorrow to all the stakeholders. We'll see what time frame they can respond in and what their responses would be. I'll ask them to work questions via electronically with you. We would post this on the UA website. It may already be there now as far as this meeting goes. But with the future intent to actually bring it to the floor for disposition. Sir.
Can I just write one second?
Sure.
Yeah, this was a joint production of the entire CJC. This was one of the few issues that we all kind of agreed on and worked really, really hard towards. I think it's within our powers based on what we've done in the past year. I think it's within our capabilities to assemble it. I think it's something we're all kind of committed to caring for. And we think it's a deal that's very positive.
Thank you. Are there any further comments or questions? Hearing none, I ask unanimous consent to accept Resolution 9 and 10 with the intention to have them brought to the floor at a future meeting for disposition this session of the Assembly. Are there any objections? Hearing none, thank you. The resolutions are accepted for introduction. The next item of business of the day is President Scorton's final address. He is obviously running a few minutes late, and we are like 1 minute on time. We are like perfectly on time. So, I'm not sure whether, well, I'm hearing the elevator. Let's give it 10 seconds. All right. Not seeing it. The next item of the day is the campus planner and the chair of the campus planning committee and the university planner. The most excellent Leslie Schill. Why don't we set up your production and we'll be prepared to interrupt when President Scorton makes his arrival.
I have a suggestion.
Sure.
If it's shorter and it might work better, why don't we just go through the introduction of Resolution Number 6?
Do you think 6 will be short?
It has to be 7 minutes. It should take care of it. You can try it.
Perhaps may I amend the member's suggestion to bring forward R8. Well, and since we're talking to Leslie Shilton, I ask members' permission to bring forward in the orders of the day, to deviate from the orders of the day, and bring forward UA Resolution 8, introduction of updating the charter of the Campus Planning Committee in the University Assembly bylaws. Mr. LaSalle, do you wish to enter this for our consideration?
I do.
Is there a second?
Second.
Professor Booker, thank you. I yield the floor to you, Mr. LaSalle, for 5 minutes.
Very good. So, early in the fall semester, we discussed with concerning student leaders, planner, and head of the campus planning committee about the disparity between language and the University Assembly language for the campus planning committee and the bylaws and actually what the campus planning committee has their charge, if you will. And so we've interacted with Leslie and Stephen Wolf via email quite a bit. They're in process of getting it almost completed. What you have in your hand, as the resolution is the complete reinsertion of the body of that in our 5.2.
Yes.
The charge of the plan committee and the bylaws. I'll run down real quick. I'm not going to read the whole thing. Changes would be, if you look at line 36, there's an addition. 8, in our, if you look at our bylaws now, 8 doesn't exist. We added some renovations that they relate to overall planning with different campus. The other change was more of a wording that we had responsibilities in our bylaws enumerated as numbers, and they had theirs more in code. So same gist. You can spread it yourself. Number 3, the last, again, is the charge and the makeup is exactly the same. It's just changing the post. So we want to get consistent across.
So a point of clarification, if I may. The Campus Planning Committee is an associated committee of the University Assembly. That means that they have to approve the charter, and so do we, if we're going to work together, and those words should be exactly the same. Currently, they're not exactly the same, and they have been out of sync for more than a year. It hasn't been a functional problem for us, but it's something we'd like to clean up. The Campus Planning Committee has worked hard on this for several months, and they intend to bring it to their committee for a vote on the 26th. And what you have before you is the words that they are bringing forward in the 26th. They have the full support of these words have the full support of the Campus Infrastructure Committee. And so we're introducing it today with the intent to vote at it at a future meeting, presumably April 7th, so that we can update our bylaws as they update the charter as well and be back into sync. Are there questions for Mr. Mitchell?
Changes that I highlighted here.
I don't see others at the external to the University Assembly and the Campus Infrastructure Committee to seek the opinion on this resolution before we would vote on it. But do members have anybody that feel this that they feel this resolution needs to be vetted with before members would have the information they need to vote, other than that they was approved on the 26th with or without changes? Then hearing none, I ask unanimous consent to accept UA Resolution 8, updating the charter of the Campus Planning Committee and the University Assembly bylaws for disposition of a future meeting. No external coordination other than standard posting and hearing back from the Campus Planning Committee themselves will be required. Thank you, Mr. LaSalle. Okay. Still nothing. Well, then we'll turn to Leslie Shill and welcome Professor Wolf, the chair of the Campus Planning Committee. Leslie, are you going to go first, or I was going to go first, but I was like, I'm counting on our President Clinton to let me catch my breath, but I still have to go. Very good. So,
We're actually at your point in the agenda, so once you have your breath.
I got my breath. I got my breath since puberty, so most of the time.
Well, then the next item of the day, and thank you as we suspend the sessions with campus planner, university planner and campus planning committee chair. I'd like to welcome back for his final formal visit with us, or scheduled visit with us, the 12th president of Cornell University, David Scott. Sir, the floor is yours.
Thank you. I was just mentioning to Joel Molina as I was on the way over here, just what an emotional time this is, and the last time I put a leash of these boots, you know, it's even a little bit more, more emotional. There's a few things I wanted to share, but I want to be sure and not to overstay the amount of time that I have. Thanks so much. In looking at the database that Gina and her colleagues developed to track the resolution, something I asked to be done so we can somehow summarize how we've been doing. It turns out that the shared governance groups in the aggregate, the SAG, PSA, EUA, and the Faculty Senate, have sent our office over 750 resolutions in the time that I've been here. And I've made about 60 of these visits over that period of time, somewhere in that order of magnitude. And she's in the process of helping us to summarize the outcome of those deliberations. But in a qualitative sense, and I don't want to read the numbers, but I said, in a qualitative sense, many of them we, and I say we because I'm also responsible, but I cast a very wide net of advice when the resolutions come to me. A very large number are approved and or acknowledged right off the bat. A smaller number are turned down, sometimes multiple times. Campus will feel strong about something, but for whatever reason, things just don't line up on. And in between those two, there are a bunch that remain in process for a while. We have some together right now. And so, one conclusion that I want to share with you, just for your consideration, as you think about the transition to the new president, the new provost, new person in the vice president for student campus life position, is whether we could do a better job collectively, our office and each of the shared governance groups, most particularly the UA because of the makeup of the group, of keeping track as we go forward of how we're doing in that regard. The database that Gina and her colleagues have developed will also allow us to look at the time course. How much of the time did we get done in the time frame? The vast majority, but not all. And so one potential suggestion, and that's all it can be as a suggestion for you to consider, not even a recommendation, is to consider the UA, perhaps, on behalf of all the shared governance groups, keeping track of how the administration is doing in that dialogue developed by the resolutions. That's one. A second suggestion is for every resolution that comes to our office, you all and the other shared governance groups discuss many, many, many more issues, some of which never come to a resolution, some of which are brought up at tables, sometimes for prolonged periods of time. And in the group that Dr. Murphy convenes with me for the student leaders, about 3 years ago, the SA president suggested that, in addition to the resolutions, that the administration share and that the student leader would, in a reciprocal way, share topics that they thought were important that were coming down for discussion that didn't yet reach the level of specificity to become a resolution. Or in other words, to keep each other informed of what the major issues are. And on the resolution side, I think when we end up looking at the team and our colleagues' data, we'll find that overall the system has been functioning as it was designed. On the second matter, though, I think we can do a lot better. I know that I can do a lot better. The administration can do a lot better on sharing things that are being considered before they're finally decided. And at least it's conceivable that the shared governance leaders could do better sharing with the administration things that you're thinking about. I do get the privilege of seeing agendas for the meeting. But things that have been discussed, you know, just coming up for consideration so that we can be doing our homework and perhaps being able to be more responsive and as you wish, part of the discussion or as you wish. So that's a second thing to think about. The third thing that I wanted to share was to ask you to look again, and this is actually a recommendation from me to you, to the frequency of these visits and how they occur, the amount of time spent by the president, frequency of visits, as I mentioned, and whether additional communication between visits might be helpful, separate from the resolution process. And the chairs of the groups do have a lot of communication with me and others in the office, but I think it could be even more. And the rest of the people who comprise the individual groups don't have nearly as much communication directly with the office. And we're all limited with how much time we can spend on these kind of activities. But I do think it's an important thing to think about what communication could occur between visits and separate votes or resolutions. A fourth thing that I had the privilege of talking about with USC just yesterday evening is the fact that the shared governance input is all at the central level of the university, or very predominantly at the central level of the university. And both at the University of Iowa, when I was administrator there and here, I wondered whether it might be helpful for certain issues at certain times to have more of a local element of discussion. So it's more obvious in USC's case. We're talking about things like curriculum matters, admissions matters. These are things that are completely in the hands of faculty. Colleges are quite autonomous in that fashion. And so there's unevenness at every university that I'm aware of those discussions happening in an organized way at the unit level. Not instead of, in addition to having input at the central university level. And there are other areas where it might not break down to geographic units. For example, one of the things that I was sharing with USC last night, which is a staff issue in my mind, is that all the staff in the university who are supported by competitive grants live in a certain special world, a world in which it's understood that if the grant goes away, it fails to be renewed, or in some cases, if the federal government decides not to fund a certain area for a period of time, this definitely happens. What are the options for those staff? And I believe anyway that the faculty staff interaction through the principal investigators of comparative grants is more the same than it is dissimilar across the university. So whether it's a grant to a faculty member at Cal's or Vet College or Arts and Sciences, mostly it's the same sort of dialogue. What are the prospects for job security? What happens if and when the grant fails? What happens if the federal budget for that agency goes down and the grant goes forward but at a much lesser rate? What happens if the amount of potential increase from year to year changes? What does that do for the ability to give cost of living increases to those staff? So there's an example where you could break university into smaller communities, in that case not necessarily by unit, but say a conversation about faculty-staff interactions related to sponsored research as one way of making things a little more local, if you will. And the last thing, which I talked about, I know multiple times, and you maybe get tired of bringing it up, I do think that it would be helpful and very productive for the campus community in general, for the individual shared governance groups other than the U.S., where all constituents come together to talk to each other about issues. So the dean of faculty and the head of the SA have a certain potential dialogue that could occur on any number of issues, from the academic calendar to student evaluations that have been brought up, and many other items. It's totally fine to discuss them with me and with the provost and with others, but I think it would also be very, very productive for the leaders of the shared governance group to talk directly to each other. Now, they say the UA that happens by design, and I think it's very, very helpful. One of the reasons the UA is such an absolutely essential piece of action. But I think despite the UA, in addition to it, not instead of it, it would be good to foster, I think, more direct conversation between and among the shared governance groups, depending on the issue of the thought. And so, those are just some thoughts. I greatly appreciate the chances that you've given me over these years to be a part of the action. I really appreciate the directness and bluntness of the conversations and the honesty with which you shared and that you agree and not agree with actions that I've taken. And my fondest hope is that you'll be equally as direct and open with that there as you've been with me. And if you are, I'm going to be optimistic and say when you are, you might transition very, very much more smooth than otherwise would be. And I know that you'll find it for a true partner for this discussion. So just some thoughts. I appreciate the time, and I'm glad to answer your question.
Thank you, sir. Questions from the members?
Yes, sir. Okay. Thank you, as always, for coming to President's Board, and congratulations as you wrap the transition and get ready to move on. Jeff, again, on transition, I think I've asked you this probably three or four times now. Is there anything specific you'd like to see this assembly or the other assembly tackle, especially now as we're coming down the final stretch? Any last loose ends or any things looking forward that would you think would be set up on the right foot with President Garrett?
Yeah. Thanks for asking me again. I know one of the things I think is a proper answer, and you'll stop asking me, but I would suggest, I think it's not right for me to suggest what those issues are that we want to tackle, but to the extent that we can wrap up things that we know are pending between us, we should do that, and we're trying to do that, and we're working together on that in many, many ways. And so, the profit for shared governance groups. So I think as much as we can finish things that are sort of on the one-yard line, that would be great. Very the converse is, if there are issues that are going to have very, very important long-term ramifications for the university, I think it's very important to take into consideration that there's opinion on those, even if she's not here right now. And on some of those, I think it's very fair to ask for the vote in right now, today, so to speak. Other things where it'll take a little more familiarity with the campus culture and the climate, maybe it's not fair to push the agenda, the sort of pace of the agenda too fast. But I think it would be helpful, and we have plenty of time to do this in the remaining 3 months, to identify those issues where you're waiting on me and stay in my face about that, but other issues where we could possibly get it done, and we could get it done maybe pending a little seat by that period, and give her enough reason to do that evaluation in a reasonable period of time. So I think those things would be helpful. You probably have already done this. You collectively have already done this. But I think reaching out to her from your perspective, to explain what the UA is very, very important. And I think that's important. And saying that to all of you that I visited and showed up at USC last night. Because every campus has shared governances of some sort. In almost every campus, it's centralized like this rather than centralized plus a distributed and local unit. But every campus is also a little tiny bit different. It seems weird to say that because more or less students are students, faculty are faculty, staff are staff. But campuses do develop local cultures that are quite unusual, sometimes absolutely unique. And so I think someone taking a deep breath, maybe the leader of each group, and on behalf of the group sharing some personal reflections on what it is that makes that group effective, and what are the roadblocks and what make it more effective, it would be helpful to her. Maybe you've already done it. But if you haven't, I think that would be helpful. And I, for one, am very comfortable not to need my permission at all, and for you to criticize how I've done it and how it could be better, you're telling me. Nothing worse than the transition of leadership of any organization and a new leader feeling hamstrung by having to do something the way the old leader does. We should share how you think things could be better. And I think that would be very helpful. But most helpful, I think, is to introduce from your perspective on how you see the optimal operation of such a thing itself, as well as interaction. Those are the
things. Thank you. I would note we intend to get you over 800 resolutions before you go. And
we're doing a good job this year. So.
We submitted the Outdoor Space Working Group report just 100 minutes ago.
Okay.
With reference to your item one.
So, great, thank you. I appreciate that.
Sure. What's the mechanism to get on with the calendar?
Lisa Yeager in the president's office is on her, so hard to know, all of her scheduling, is that right?
Yeah, or they can email me and I can work with
them. Yeah, so, and also if you can't remember all those different names, if you can't remember the names, just send it to me, because Lisa's office is, her desk is 20 feet from my desk.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. And I don't think President-elect Yeager is going to be here very much between now and July 1, that she's not tied up like for charter weekend. But in her appointment is made, I think it's good. And she's a voracious, very effective reader. And, you know, something, if you should decide to send some perspectives on the UA, I know she would devour it. You know, anybody who's an attorney has that aspect. But when I was a first-year med student, I lived in a dorm with first-year law students at Northwestern. And it's funny to sort of a dorm when they had law and medicine students together. And we would be studying, I don't know, you know, the number of muscles in the foot or some socially meaningful thing like that. And we'd get done with it. And then we'd go in the hallway and we'd be talking, laughing, bring some music on. And some first year law student would break out of his room and say, "Can't you be quiet? I'm reading Torch. You're driving me crazy." And I always was amazed at the amount of reading the first year law students had compared to what we had. And we did a lot of reading too, but it's different. It's different sort of stuff. That's my third year, of course, in the case of return. But like many training in the law, she's a big time reader and careful reader. So. You can do both. You know, send her some stuff to read if you so choose, and also take the anger and get you on it.
Other items? Well, not hearing it. Oh, Mr. Burkhoff.
Yeah, I have a question because it's important to me.
Sure.
I'm not asking you to explain this. Such a vital and such a persistent issue on this campus. I think a lot of people who work on this, it's their hope that the conversation at higher levels, at the level of the trust, in some respect reflects the level around me. So what more can we do to communicate this?
So I'm saying this because I mean it. It's not just a standard of each other. You've been a terrific proponent of the facts of the case, as you saw them, question things based on what I'm going to call analytical, an analytical basis, mathematical basis. I want to be very careful not to step on this question that it would be coercive for me to say that. But I do want to point out that I think there's three somewhat separable set of considerations. And again, I mean in no way to influence the discussion. But I hope you'll at least consider that there may be three subsets of the considerations. One has to do with the social, societal importance of the basic issue of the making statement. A second would be the effectiveness of such a maneuver on the things that you're trying to influence. And the third would be its effect on the university. In my only commentary, I'm trying to be very consistent about this, in previous iterations, I don't know what the resolution is going to say. I purposely, when you send me this stuff, don't read it when I know that's going to be discussed after I finish it, because I don't want to end the discussion. But in previous iterations, my only concern was the my uncertainty, not the, but my uncertainty about the effect on the university's finances when they're so fairly balanced and when I'm so low to put more pressure on the staff workforce. And so that doesn't mean that you shouldn't pass the resolution if you so choose, or that action shouldn't be taken. But I think that if you're asking about trustees thinking about it, I think if somehow we could think about those three things, and maybe there's more ways to split up than I'm not thinking of, but I do think these are three sets of considerations that you are obviously all rolling up as you think about it. So if you want to go the other way and parse it and dissect it a little bit, you might think about it in that fashion. That doesn't guarantee that trustees are thinking about it that way, but that's how I think about it in those three pieces.
I guess just to me down a little bit, trustees are helpful.
Trustees are talking about it. No question about it, and the reason I know that is that I brought it up to them. And even though Joel's been here a relatively short period of time, since already he can attest to the fact, and that Joel Bird's been here a tiny bit longer than Joel, that when I give my reports to the board, even parts of the board meeting that are not open to the public, I try to be very blunt about what's happening on campus and things that are coming our way, which you agree, Joe, including things where the campus disagrees with me sometimes very strongly. And so I'm bringing it up to them and asking them to discuss it. And I've done it, Jeff, in two venues, in the investment community where the decisions are made, and in the full board meeting, of which the investment community is a codified subset of the full voting board. I've brought up in both of those. And I think I heard this, and I hope I didn't get this wrong, that at some point you're going to have the CFO with you and talk about this stuff, and maybe the chief investment officer.
That is correct. They'll be here on the 21st.
Yeah, and so that's helpful. And once again, they should be here as resources, not as the decision makers. That would be not the right way to do things from my perspective, but those resources I think might be valuable. And as I mentioned to those who have been brought this forward on multiple occasions, I am openly asked that you do directly interact with the board. In this particular case, as opposed to a lot of other things, the board's action is delegated in a certain way that I don't accept. I can recommend and so on. And the board does follow up my recommendations in general, which is really gratifying. But this is one of those areas where the board itself delegates final decision authority to the investment committee. There's many, just to make sure you understand that, so sort of arcane. Many other areas, the committee will come up with recommendations on which the full board of trustees has to vote. So the university's budget each year is recommended by the finance committee, but the board votes on it. But individual investment decisions are not voted on by the board. That's delegated by the bylaws to the investment. One of the very few places where there's a total fulsome delegation to one subset. So that means, in addition to the board talking about it writ large, the investment committee is where the real locus of that discussion is. And Donald Pattern is the chair of the committee, and I know you know that, Chuck, but just to make sure others do it, and NJ others will see that.
Perhaps one more, Joseph?
We've got two more of you.
Okay, Professor Wood. First of all, I'm a guest at the UA, and I don't want to crowd out other discussion. I just want to say that for those who are not aware, President Scorton created an ad hoc committee on integrating sustainability commitments into the Cornell Endowment several years ago. I was on that committee representing the students' interests who were allowed to select a faculty member. And that report, I think, has not been widely distributed. And this predated the divestment issue from the broader analysis of what is the impact, what are the opportunities. And divestment has crowded out in some ways, in a constructive way, but also perhaps in a distracting way, the broader conversation about what are the different steps we might want to take or consider or analyze on how to have our values more firmly and squarely represented in our investment decisions. And those of you who are interested in this issue should get a copy of this report. I'd be happy to share it with you. I'd be interested in the President's
for
whatever happened in that report,
because
I don't think it saw the light of day.
We looked at it. It's available. It's not hidden anywhere. It was meant to be a process-oriented sense to talk about principles. And I think it's a very, very good point to show you. And could I volunteer your good officer's goal to make that leave available? Maybe you can share with Jim if that works. And was it 7 years ago already? It's unbelievable. Yeah, it's unbelievable. That's one of those things people might say all the time.
Thanks so much for being here. Yeah, personally, we all really, really admire your work, and it's, yeah, we're sorry. But, I guess, just a philosophical or political question about shared governance. So, by its very nature, shared governance is composed by a bunch of stakeholders and groups whose desires and goals at the core are essential, right? You know, we have parts of the school that want to grow, parts of the school that don't want to pay more, parts of the school that want more less transparency.
Yeah.
It all these oppositions. I guess I'd ask, if it's good to see those play out so that you don't have to deal with them or weigh them yourself to have them be dealt with. So I guess that makes sense in any circumstance. I guess I wonder what advice you've given to President Garrett about handling shared governance and improving it in the future, allowing the groups to be more represented in independence, to be more facing the administration rather than paying administrative information to their stakeholders.
Yeah, you're making great points. I actually haven't had that discussion organized with her, but it's planned. And so it's very timely for you to say that. I couldn't agree more in the sense of what you're saying. But part of the reason, I'm sorry, I wasn't clear enough, but I suggested that some dialogue should occur between where there is tension. And I'll say that the SA leadership, for example, in the past years, and the resolution the faculty said in the past, I think it was 2 years ago now, maybe 2.5 years ago, about assignments before breaks, was one example of SA and the faculty center talking directly to each other. And even though that may be followed imperfectly, it was a great example of something that as recently as in the last couple of weeks I saw as a faculty member, got a reminder from the dean of faculty about the fact that resolution was passed. And obviously that's a fairly mild issue. There are some of the tense issues that you alluded to. So I think that's important. I am going to share the importance with President Lefter and so on. But my own point of view is that, as I sort of danced around earlier, but I'll try to be more direct about it, I think it's important for us to develop our own approach to this with you, as opposed to dealing with any way that you need to be constrained, not in one degree of freedom, but in the hybrid. And the presence of came before me gave me that same person. And obviously, some things that are traditions here, like the present being invited to come to these, I sure hope continue. So that's up to me. But in terms of the way to make the system even better, I think there's two aspects of it that are very separate. One aspect is how we interact with each other, but the other aspect is how we to represent people to represent. And I do not think we should ask the administration about that at all. I think that would be completely optional what you're having. I think how the folks are represented is your business and their business. And if I were on that side of the discussion, which I was in the early part of my career, I actually wouldn't want to be a bureaucrat. Except on the other part, I would. That is, how can we interact? So it's better. But I assume. And I know in some cases that you guys are always talking about that, and that you are not lacking for input from your constituents, and they think you're not representing them. I know that the SA went through a lot of that in the last 18 months. And I think it's a very healthy thing. But that's got to be, I think, divorced from the opinions of the administrators. You can always ask opinions later, but I think the discussion should be between the people you're representing and you. And I think these are dynamic looking things. That hopefully changes as things change. The only thing I would say, again, at the risk of being a little tiresome, is I do think we lack something as an institution by having all the shared governance only at the central level. Because certain things do occur at the local level. And the question is, how could teams really find enough time in their lives to also be involved at local level? Wouldn't that be the same people? But I think we missed something by not looking at some of the differences that are occurring in this country. We should quite differently.
I was
Speaking of somebody who's not shy, can I invite Marty Hatch to please come forward? On behalf of the Assembly, sir, we delegated to Marty, and Marty has brought a gift to you on our behalf.
Well, I was granted the privilege of giving the gift, or getting the gift for you, and there was no guidelines except it's a no mug. I also happen to know you have a beehive and you have a beekeeper's hat, so I didn't get one of those. And they said something about jazz, and I know you know that I know and you know. And you had a radio show, right? Blues radio show or mixed jazz.
So Latin jazz, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, this will fit nicely. So we got a couple of recordings of blues-based jazz, a couple of fine flute solos. And then I decided to add, personally, a book for some weight to get. And the CDs are light, you know, and I still have a CD player.
I do.
Oh, great.
I can afford them, actually, at home. That's how old I am. I still have a turntable.
Okay, so there's a chance to buy a book for a professor. It's really pretty dicey to do that. But for president, it's even more. But I happen to have had the experience, back about 8 or more years ago, of being down in the bookery, and I just read Obama's books, and I said, wow, this is going to be great, you know, good book writer, and I liked the things he wrote. And then I looked on the on the labels there, and he said, books by prominent Ithacans that you might like. And under your name was People's History of the United States. Okay, good. Okay, so I decided the book that I'd give you was not out of keeping with that. And have a good one.
Thank you. I'm not trying to squash the discussion of possessions, but you the ball. It's got to take too quick. So I did have a radio show. I was a producer and a DJ on a radio show for almost 5 years, a Latin jazz radio show, and it was a classical station that was 168 hours a week classical music. And it turned out that in that community, on the weekend nights, people tended not to listen to classical music radio, so whatever reason. They felt there was no big risk in allowing some people to experiment with a jazz show. And so I had a Sunday night to that jazz show. And it was so successful that the station manager came to me one day and said, you're doing great. You moved the needle so that Sunday night, instead of nobody listening to the station, almost nobody was listening to the station. So that was it. And then on the Howard Zinn thing, I'll tell you something, Marty, I think you'll like this. A very moving thing happened yesterday that I shared with you. I speak to that just before I walked in. A group of students from the debate, I forgot the new name of that group. It's
Speech and Debate.
Speech and Debate, sorry, because it just changed in the past. Brought me a book about the current letter union. My grandpa, rest in peace, was a very active socialist and organizer of the Upper Midwest current letter union. And they dug up a book somewhere. And in that book are 5 different references and sections talking about my grandpa. And it just brought tears to my eyes. And so I was thinking about Howard Zinn. And all those, and my grandpa passed a very long time ago, decades ago, and I often wonder what he would say if he saw me now, and I'm not going to share that with you. I mean, this is a family show. Anyway, this means a lot to me, Marty, coming from you and from all of you, and there's no way to exaggerate how much this shared government stuff is meant to me. And we got about 100 days yet to get some stuff done, which we'll choose every day. So, thank you guys.
I recommend you take a 2-minute break and ask people to join at the door to shake President Scorton's hand as he departs, and we'll set up for the next presentation.
Did you get an note from me? I said yes.
I actually have a
response
for them. I said, I'm going to talk to you.
See you.
Thanks,
Jim.
Thanks.
See you guys around.
I'll make sure that comes out.
Lower and left.
Lovely.
I'm going to sit with us in minutes. Here's a package of all the resolutions.
Thanks.
Okay, if I can please call members back to order, please. There is not a clicker, but we can have somebody stand by the laptop. And there is a chair up there. Ladies and gentlemen, please come back to order. We are running slightly behind, not too bad, but slightly, and we know we have some people who have to leave at 6. So, it is my pleasure to reintroduce Professor Stephen Wolf, Associate Professor of Natural Resources from Taos, and the most excellent university planner, Leslie Schill. Yes, MEU, the MEUP, the most excellent university planner. Thank you for joining us today. We greatly appreciate your time. I believe they're going to give us an overview of the next couple years or so of what's going to go on in the university and what's before the campus planning committee. Professor Wolf, the floor is yours for 20 minutes.
Thanks very much. I'm very interested in campus governance. I don't claim to know a lot about it. I'm learning a lot. The importance of the relationship between the Campus Planning Committee and the UA and some of the other committees, I guess, chartered by the UA, that's become increasingly important to me in the work I've been doing with the Campus Planning Committee. I've been the chair for 2 years. I didn't serve on the committee before that. And it's something that I enjoy, but it's also a source of great frustration. And I'm of two minds. On the one hand, the Campus Planning Committee, as I understand it, the clearinghouse of information among folks at the university who are engaged in development and have a stake in development, and it's a forum for exchange and deliberation and to make planning visible and vibrant. On the other hand, I understand the Campus Planning Committee to be a governance mechanism by which the university and the different constituencies hold the university accountable for development and development decision making. And those two purposes don't always fit together nicely, and I'm still working through how to balance those and integrate those and think about those. But over time, to the extent the accountability piece is important, the relationships and the active partnership and the personal relationships with other folks active and invested in university governance is going to be important. If we do ever have a contentious development issue and it goes to the mat, it's not clear what kind of the muscle that the Campus Planning Committee is going to have. We report directly to the President, and I don't really understand how other committees relate to the President's office, but clearly we have a link. We don't use that link very often. President perhaps would report the number of times in history it's been exercised. 3 times. But the point is that if there ever was an issue, they're going to build X in location Y, or they're going to tear down Z in location J. And that issue was not handled in a way that the Campus Planning Committee felt was appropriate. What would we do? And I think my answer currently is I would work with other UA committees to try to see if we could make some progress and have that dialogue that President Schwartz just talked about. Because I don't think the Campus Planning Committee on its own would get very far. So I'd like to make just 4 or 5 kind of bullet points about things that we have been working on, are working on, and have accomplished. And then I'll turn it over to our new university planner, Leslie Schill. It's been a pleasure to work with Leslie. You've been here for 6 months?
8 and a half.
I think that the University Planning Office is very well staffed professionally. People are serious about their work. They have good integration internally. And their position in facilities is a strong one. But I think it's an open question about how the planning function and the mechanism we have for being analytical,
but it's embedded in the development machine of Cornell University, how that works. And is that a recipe for success, and is that appropriate, or is it dysfunctional? So I think those of you, including me, who aren't really in full comprehension of how development works at Cornell University, it's an interesting model we have, that the development decision-making and the development action is loosely linked to planning, and we're here to try to strengthen that link. And that's what the Campus Planning Committee does. So, one thing, and you were talking about this before I arrived, we have revisited our charge. We created a subcommittee that worked over the course of the semester. And quite interestingly, and I think with some confidence, they've come back with very small tweaks to our charge. They basically said, whoever wrote this thing the last time got it right. But I hope they will take some heart and confidence to know that the committee visited this critically. They went with a blank slate, and at the end of the day, they came back with only minor modifications. I think it's good periodically to do that. And you have that language, I understand. We're going to formalize it this Thursday in our CPC meeting, if it comes back to this body, and then it gets formalized, unless you'd like to make changes that we could discuss.
No, I think we've been working with you, and so unless you make some changes from the floor, if they're pro forma, we'll adopt them at the meeting. We bring it to the floor. If they're substantial, we'll discuss them. But I would expect that it should stay.
I just going backwards a bit. Kendall Hill has become the liaison between the UA and the CPC, and that was the plan, which I think has been vacant. We're not on a vision, but we have tried to make steps in terms of building that bridge that I mentioned in my opening remarks, and that is that bridge, so I'm very pleased about that. This Thursday, we're having Bill Tiffany, who's a new hire at Cornell University, and I call him the project czar. I don't think that's his real title. The facilities has created a new process, a new structure to handle development projects at the university. They've consolidated and centralized that, and Bill is the point man for that. And we're going to learn more about the new administrative model inside the university for doing development projects. And so that's an important piece of the development mechanism, and the CPC is in dialogue with that, whether we're in conversation or chasing behind is an open question. I'll let Leslie address. Secondly, Leslie has brought great energy to a couple very important things. One is we are now for the first time formalizing the procedures by which variances or amendments will be created through the Campus Master Plan. The Campus Master Plan is an important document ratified by the trustees and has significant authority. To the extent that development decisions are made that contradict the plan, that creates a problem for everyone. Right now, we don't have a formal mechanism for how those contradictions are addressed. Leslie is leading an effort to create a mechanism in consultation with lots of folks. It's in the second draft now. I assume it's going to get out of the Campus Planning Committee on Thursday, and perhaps you want to run. That's a very substantial effort. What do we do, and who gets the information? What do we do with that information? How is it processed? Who gets a voice as these projects rise and fall in relation to the Campus Master Plan? Secondly, Leslie has initiated an effort to create a check-in or assessment of the health and vitality, environment, and success or failure of the Campus Master Plan after 7 or 8 years on the books. And that's never been done. That's not a criticism of Dean Amundsen. In fact, there have been assessments. It takes significant staff time and money. Now is a good time to do that. So Leslie's office is leading an analytical effort to check in and say, what is the health of the plan? What is it accomplished? What is not been accomplished? Are we on a path towards achieving this plan? Are we off and left field? And until we get that plan, we won't know, but I think that's a very important data-driven effort. It's going to be very useful for your office and for outside bodies, including campus planning. Two more items. One very important to this group. My sense is that attendance and engagement at Campus Planning Committee of the members, and I think 8 of those members are staff, 9 are staff by the UA.
That's 9 from all the assemblies.
Right. What happened is the Campus Planning Committee meetings are pretty well attended, but often the attendees are ex officio members and the people who are engaged professionally in the development function of the university. The extent that the CPC is an organ of governance, we need to have those assembly representatives
they're not exhorting to attend or to speak when they do attend, but we're working on that. It's tended to be a conversation about government insiders, which I'm not. I often find myself kind of trying to keep up with the conversation for the term in a language about developments that I just can't keep up with because I have a day job, like all of you. And so we're working on that. To the extent that the UA has responsibility or some opportunity,
you only have one, right?
The UA only has one liaison, correct?
But of course, with the charge, each member of the body should have
to. To the extent that the UA can help me work with the various assemblies to make sure they have people who are still in Ithaca, still want to participate, and are the best person for the job, I want to work with you to see if we can get those folks in.
Hey, John, would be to help you make sure that happens, and I'm happy to do that. I can reach out directly, but to make sure that each of the different constituent assemblies has all the seats filled that are necessary, we can work together on that.
Thank you very much.
Yep, thanks.
Let's talk next week, and we'll get that started.
Very good. Thank you very much.
And the last is just again to recognize Leslie Jones, Public Delgado ran the search as university architect. The applicant pool was strong, the process was strong. I participated in that search committee, and I can assure you that that was a professionally managed search which led to the best qualified applicant, and we were very lucky to have him on staff.
Can I ask a quick question? How much does the Capital Planning Committee learn about finance of this stuff? In other words, we had 10 years ago when I was on the UA and the Capital Planning Committee, long discussion about deficit finance and stuff and about contributing to the major other mining of the university budget. And they had sort of pledged that there would be no deficit finance building anymore. And, you know, and since we're still paying the penalties in that, because those deficits are significant, we're paying off more. I'm wondering how much does the planning committee actually have a veto of a project that is completely funded before it's launched?
Zero. We have no veto power. We can take a public position for or against the project or promote a modification, but we don't hold any veto power.
Well, okay, veto power. How much power do you have at all? I mean, what's the point of having a committee if somebody comes and says, we're going to propose this, and the administration kind of trustees are behind it, you know, and we're going to use this piece of land right here today.
That's a conversation that I think we are having and need to have. It's a delicate conversation. It's ongoing. We try to position ourselves in a positive light and talk about what we support and what we're enthusiastic about and try to lead with the carrot rather than the stick. But I alluded to the potential to go to the mat over very delicate and quasi irreversible decisions about where you're going to put the next big building.
Most of the planning committee members are staff members whose jobs come from the same university that is saying that they want to do this.
The campus planning committee is designed officially to be staffed by people who do not have a vested interest in development.
I see. Part of architects and natural resources, architects, and all those people get paid to join the university.
Absolutely, you are correct about that. And they tend to be crazy like you were new.
So, if I can hold this dialogue so that they can finish their presentation, but we will. No, we'll wait till you're finished with your presentation and see if we have time to continue Q&A.
We are in the middle of reorganizing ourselves in facility services, so that's another time change happening. And I'm in the middle of hiring someone to join our team, leading the senior transportation planner. The campus planning office composition includes planning, landscape architecture design, and transportation planning services, as well as GIS analysis and mapping. So that's that's our team. We're multidisciplinary, and we are charged with stewarding the cancer master plan, looking at master planning across campus, whether that be within colleges or units, looking at budget planning and doing budget reviews, as well as reaching out and bringing in community discussions so that we're going to make all of our neighbors and other constituents in this larger community beyond campus to affect positive change in planning. And today I was asked, and so this is my first run at this, and I appreciate the opportunity to come. Provide a brief update on what's happening in planning and what you can expect to see. Status updates, things that I'm sure you know about, some but I wanted to give a broad view of what's happening that we've had either a strong hand in or that we have had some opportunity in campus planning office to kind of carve a little bit and make sure that good integrated planning has been done and considered in review of project work. And then looking at where we are in the community as well. So thank you for being the pointer for this. So as Steve discussed, we are going to define a process to have an amendment made to the campus master plan. So this document has been alive and well and working for the last 7 years. It was adopted by the trustees in 2008. It's 30 to 50 year blueprint for the Ithaca physical plant here. And it looks at, it makes a number of visionary statements for what we'd like to see this campus grow to become physically in the next 30 to 50 years and how to get there. So it has some of those steps to how to get there. But largely, it's a living document, as you see on the next slide here. And so we want to make sure that this document is flexible and can adjust to change. There are changes. There are unknowns. There are things that we've already discovered in 2008 that would say preclude a building study or a program has changed, and we know we have new leadership coming aboard. So there may be some mission changes, strategic approaches. We need to document a process whereby if there is a change or if something has come up that has been revealed, new data, new information, that we can be flexible and just be a dynamic living document. We need to have a process whereby we can consider, and so we're asking that any change that should be proposed to the campus master plan has to be very helpful. And we would do due diligence to review it, and the campus planning committee has a role in that review as well. We're asking that, for example, if you can take a project through its paces, project that looks to potentially make a dramatic change to the campus master plan, so this may be generally in the land use area, so if you're looking at something that should have a physical defined difference from what the campus master plan projected, then you would need to come and propose why you have a statement of sort of an extreme certainty, or that there's very new information, or that programmatically, or from a mission perspective, or academically, we're making a large change in the same sort of like that. We're putting together what we think is reasonable. It's not a tiny process to go through. You have to put together a full review of mitigation and evaluation of impact across the campus. So looking at what this means to make a change to the landscape, to open space, circulation, to transportation systems, utilities, what that means for the built system, what was envisioned, how about the historic resources, what are we thinking about with regard to community impact. So all of these have to be evaluated and considered in order to move forward. But we think this is a very important process to have in place so that we can do this in the long term so that the health and the longevity of the master plan can be maintained and maintained. So this is a very important first process that I've got the chance to lead, and it's been very interesting. It's also been interesting because we're doing this at the same time as we're going through the process here with the Campus Planning Committee and kind of reviewing what our charge is and how we interface with the Campus Master Plan. So the timing of these two projects and really evaluation has been very good. But for me as a learning opportunity, it also is to understand where our charge is and where we want to focus our efforts. So on to the next. I wanted to start with recent accomplishments. So for folks that may be around in the summertime and know that they couldn't travel up and down South Road last summer, and what a pain that was, and I don't want to upset anyone, this is going to be a little bit similar this summer. We have accomplished a complete street on a long stretch of Tower Road, our very important sign that travels east and west on campus. And in multimodal transportation maps, so really encouraging bicycling and creating more gracious sidewalk systems for pedestrians. Maintaining important views down in that from the tower to the best school. And then really bringing in some green infrastructure to sort of added late in the game to the transportation safety project, so to treat on-site stormwater. So having a bioswale and having woody shrubs, and what you see here, I know there's a bit of but you see a joint horticulture and landscape architecture class, the urban Eden. Students help design it and help plant it from the design conquered with access funds. So it's really just not a great project. It's a great plan. It's something that we can't have to plan. Called to the fore for one of our very important artists on campus to make it a true factor to the East West. And this is something that's envisioned to help establish movement towards the East that they can't have to plan for a very long term for where they would be if there is moving in the future. Probably not, but in the longer term development for more academic uses to the West and East. So that's one accomplishment that we're pretty proud of. Tower Garden, the intersection here, is being completely renovated and done this summer in integration with the project. So that intersection, again, all the infrastructure, all the lighting, ADA ramping, there's some widening of the turning radii, so this bus is being come out safely instead of heading into the oncoming passenger lane and the new bus pull off on the north side of the tower.
So that's in front of 81. I'm sorry? In front of 81. So this is in front of Trillium. Oh, in front of Trillium. Yeah. Oh,
awesome. Right. Massive. So it'll be offline again a little for after reunion, but we're really pulling this together in front of you.
Leslie, I don't mean to interrupt. We're at our 20 minutes. How many more slides do you have?
Like a lot. Offline. So if you want to just flip through the next three, these are exciting new facilities. You've probably heard seeing
happening. Barnum's
coming on. East Avenue is being Okay, so, yes, that's happening. Now, there'll be patching that happens. There'll be improvements that happen along the way. Barman will not open until the waning days of 2015 or the very beginning of 2016. And so there will be times when there's construction happening across. But this is, we know that the construction has been a big, let's say, deterrent to traveling northbound from where people usually like it. And so that'll be exciting. Upton Hall is going to get paid for it, but it's far deeper than just the facade. It's really going to make some very great strides towards updating the look and feel and image of this school, but also it's going to have some major energy savings. This whole graph is really incredibly inefficient. And so it'll look new and it'll feel new and it'll bring the College of Engineering, they would like to have a stronger presence, and that will help this. But in addition, they've done a cool job renovation. So they're really revitalizing what we have in existing structures and putting their investment right back into that same footprint and actually reducing their energy. Next, so at the end of Tower Road, we have sort of a get to the spot where you think you might know that there should be less school and there are many decades of development that are not well integrated and difficult to find their way around. They're getting an entirely new front entry and it's going to have really social interaction spaces as well as the public realm of the space. And the College of Veterinary has spent a long time kind of coordinating their planning for this. This is something that's going on now, demolition has begun, and it's a renovation, rejuvenation, as well as expansion project, so it's pulling together everything. Wayfinding plan is something that's launching out of the campus site office right now. So this is something we're going to be coming out to the campus community and talking about how people get to campus and when they get here, do they know they've reached Cornell? And many of them don't. And then how they get around campus. So this is establishing some gateways, probably six, because campus does not have just one way to get in. And trying to get people as quickly as possible to deposit their vehicle somewhere, particularly for visitors, and then to be able to find their way around campus either by foot, potentially by bike, or by bike system, as well as in the future having some internal circulating transit. So in this way, we start the system, and this is going to be a system of plans that rolls out. We're finding some first. A bike and head plan are coming in about the next 6 months, which will be launched by the Transportation Services Division. followed by a circulation study looking at how everybody works together. And that will all roll up into a new transportation plan. And I will leave that for your great agency too, but just for things to come. But a lot of exciting on the front of transportation planning. Planning in the community, this is where I'm spending a lot of my time right now. Really working with the city in College Town, working with the town and putting a show out in the east. And then some exciting news that you read in Cornell Daily Sun today. We were all, many partners were able to leverage more money, more time, more staff, energy to make sure that we can have an important trail connection along Highway Road to the east and west. And this is going to be important for new housing that's likely to come in the future out in the east area. And so it's an important missing link, and it allows for better transportation and a lot of safety for the site bridge that doesn't allow for pedestrian bicycle travel. And last, something coming in the future, this is really a great example of integrated planning design, the utility infrastructure project with the old coordinated leverage and help, and so that the timeline came together that we could really revitalize the ACTRON. And so looking at how we can maintain, preserve, protect, but also rejuvenate one of our economic landscapes.
Thank you. We are essentially out of time. On behalf of members, let me pass on three things that have been on members' minds. We don't need to address them necessarily today. We can do that in dialogue. And may I request, if you don't mind, would you send us or give us your slides? President Scorton, in his financial transparency presentation, talked about we need to do less new building and more deferred maintenance or take a pause. That doesn't mean no building, obviously. But many constituents have been concerned about the budget, tuition increases, et cetera. And so we would expect that these things are, although not in the realm of the CPC to approve, at some level evaluated by the CPC. And then if we have issues, we can address them with the university in that regard. The master plan, looking at the resolution that we're trying to, the charter, the Office of Sustainability, I'm not sure, it's not clear how you interface with them, but with Cornell's commitment to achieve carbon neutrality by 2035, I would think that could significantly impact how and the priorities of the plan, and so how that is integrated. And coming back to your comment about assembly reps on the CPC, when we tried to help with that in previous endeavors, we noted that the CPC did not meet the first or second Tuesday of the month between such and such. It was always a ad hoc, develop the meeting time in place when you need it. And the students were not that flexible with, you know, they can't plan class schedules and all that other stuff. Same with employees. We recommended at that time, certainly it's only something for you to consider, if you had CPC times at a, you know, put out a calendar in advance with dates and times, or put out a consistent date and time and then cancel the ones you don't need, people could then plan to attend better. Are there any other quick, very quick comments from members? Seeing none, thank you for joining us. We greatly appreciate your time.
Thank you.
We need to turn now to the final item on the agenda. We are over time. I ask the members' unanimous consent to extend the meeting for nominally up to 15 minutes, but we'll go as we need. Are there any objections? Hearing none. I recognize Professor Marty Hatch for UA Resolution 6, and while he is coming forward to for whatever he needs to prepare, I need to alert members that I have a conflict of interest related to divestment. I was the sponsor of last year's resolution that was passed by the Assembly. As such, we discussed it in the UA exec, and for the issue of divestment, I am transferring the gavel to Chairman Pro Tem, Matthew Battaglia. So, Mr. Battaglia.
Thank you, Mr. Blair.
I agree with Mr. Blair.
The first one is a sort of no-brainer, which is we're presenting this resolution for consideration, and we'd like it to be considered sometime between now and the 22nd of April, in the sense that we haven't yet decided with the sense of approval of whether it's going to be the 7th of April or the 21st, but that particular decision would take place, that is, when it is argued and when it is decided, would take place in consideration of item number 8 on the agenda, or Roman number 8, which is the special rules of order. So can we all agree that our 7 minutes is condensed down to 65 seconds, I think 65 so far, and that you accept this resolution?
Are there any questions for Mr. Hatch? Seeing none, we will take your time back and transfer to resolution or agenda item number 8.
Agenda item number 8, Mr. Pataglia is the chair of Pataglia, is the sculptor of. And I only want to say in transferring this that we had many conversations about it by email. I think we're all trying to get to the right balance in terms of presentation. And that's what this program is about. Particular discussion is about the rules of order, right?
That is correct.
Before
moving forward, I'd also like to alert the Assembly that on the other side, I have been in contact with Joanne DiStefano and AJ Edwards, and I think this will come up. They are not able to be here on April 7th. They have made time on their schedules to be here April 21st. The Assembly is free to decide as it chooses. However, traditionally, the Assembly has provided reasonable accommodation to administrators when it comes to scheduling. We will continue to discuss this, but I believe it's pertinent for the Assembly to be aware of this before we continue with discussion.
Well, I'd like to suggest that you take a poll of the Assembly as to whether they want to postpone the regular order of consideration, which may be 2 weeks after the presentation of the resolution usually, to accommodate those folks, or whether they want to just go ahead on the 7th. Will you poll your Assembly members now to see? I'm willing to go on that basis.
Would you say that's a formal motion to postpone resolution number 7 or 6 under consideration to April 21st?
Jeffrey, is that agreeable to you? Would you second that?
Well, I don't know if I'm making a motion to move to the 21st. Can I speak about this for a second?
You have 30 seconds.
There are reasons to move to the 21st. There are reasons to be anxious about moving to the 21st. The reasons, anxious is maybe a strong word, but the later we do it, the less of the impact that are. Concerns about this the last time we were around were just that it were as open a conversation as it could be. That's going to be more my answer to the later it happens, just that it's a really open conversation as it helps. I'm perfectly open to overuse that term. I'm open to either April 7th or April 1st, but my feeling about the rules of order
and my point about it is simply I agree with the openness of conversation. If the 21st means that we will, as we sculpt the dialogue, that is how it will be taking place according to the ways that we discussed by email correspondence, where there is interchange, a lengthy time of interchange between proponents and the expert witnesses, I guess you could say, that there can be constant forms of dialogue rather than just long presentations which then are followed by votes. That's what our discussion has been. So I'm willing to say that if that is open, if that's defined as open, that's the definition of open to me, and it would make sense to then move to the 21st.
Hey, Professor Booker? That is correct.
Not necessarily, and hopefully to inform decisions of the administration. But we don't necessarily need to hear the administration's argument for or against it if we feel as though we have sufficient information to vote on the issue.
That is correct.
And I have a feeling that people can't let this body be against this resolution, but I think it's because they try to understand what happened.
decided to unjoin them, and then we had a vote on the one, is at the last minute of the year. I don't think this is as controversial as members of the committee. So one possibility is that always do a straw poll of members of the committee, decide the best approach to this issue.
Members of the committee or members of the board?
The assembly. So, I mean, a lot of this is about, well, what are we going to get? Is it going to come out favorably for or against the resolution? In some cases, you may be able to actually free up time on your agenda if you actually think about being a straw poll of members. Not binding, but you may, and actually, that's actually what happened with that. There's some members who are really concerned about the potential financial issues, and there are also members asking why these two important issues bound together. The subcommittee to get back, to decide the fundraising, we will present it with one resolution. We voted. And because of the rules of this organization, we're not permitted to vote on the second because we're not allowed to come in and open to the public.
Well, if I remember that debate, I wasn't on the assembly then, but I sat in for the debate in Jeffrey. What happened was they were decoupled, and what came back to the assembly was an anti-divestment. It wasn't a pro-divestment.
No, it didn't
have anything to do with it. Oh, no, it was an anti-divestment one which was voted at the 20-something April meeting. If I may remember that, yes, that the UA voted against divestment, literally. And that, what this is a revisiting of that. Yes. And that's why National Chairman Blair has accused himself, because under the order of things, there was a straw vote taken, and it was interpreted as being that the assembly wanted to consider whether they were against it, and it was brought back as an anti-divestment. Well, my point in saying all this is I know people have to go. We're willing to, what has been proposed is that it's necessary for us to wait for the 21st because we have to have the university's position stated again by the investment officers, who actually are not stating a position for or against the resolution, according to what President Gordon just said. They are actually just providing information. Our sense of the committee is, if they're going to provide information, the rules of order, we would require that there be an extensive amount of time to challenge their information from the point of view of our view about this. Now, if what you're suggesting is that we can take a vote on this resolution on April 7th, that's what actually I was hoping would happen. But I was willing to make a concession to normal assembly practice, which is to request from the administration that there be expert witnesses against the resolution.
Mr. Blair.
My concern about not hearing the university before voting on the resolution, if we vote in favor of the resolution and basically say to the trustees, please tell your investment officers to divest, and we have not heard, maybe nothing new, not heard the university before that, it undermines what they're going to potentially say to the trustees. We don't know. It is more than just a courtesy. We don't know what they'll say until they say it. I know I personally would like to hear their point of view before I register a vote, but if the question is called on the 7th and seconded, we will vote.
Well, I'll propose motion that we entertain this on the 7th, and then there can be a second, and we can vote pro or against the 7th. And then, Jim, your point, Chairman, there, your point, is well taken, but it may not be appropriate. We can have a discussion of that particular thing. I'll propose motion. Is there a second? You have that.
There's been a motion to postpone resolution number 6 until April 7th. Is there a second?
No, not proposed. To actually consider.
To consider April 7th.
April 7th. To consider it, debate, and act on
it. I would just like to say that I think it's practical about this. It's not coming to mind. You can get a financial advisor from the university to come and do a test. I think what you're going to have is that contracted engagement. Board of trustees on this issue. It may be possible that every year you will have to actually offer a resolution on this issue before finalists. You can think about South Africa and other things. None of those things happen overnight. Student organizations propose over and over and over again resolutions about how
issues off after that. It's not like you vote a resolution.
I have, as a practical matter, at some point, this body needs to tell me, outside of this issue, what time to allot on the 7th. In other words, we have other agenda items that we need to do, and I need to either schedule for the 7th or the 21st or split them or tell you that we're not going to get to them based on this decision.
Well,
so there is a practical implication of, I mean, you want it up, or if I understand it, you want it up or down on the 7th. If it's down, then we recycle it to the 21st for the perhaps 1 hour, full thing.
Yeah, but let's vote on one, and then we can get to the other.
Mr. Hatch, Ms. Chairman, did you have a comment?
Thank you. I have a question, actually, point of order. I'm not quite sure about process-wise, when is this going to be open for public comment to be... need to come to the table for dispatching to the public, and at what point would this be on the 7th? It would be voted on then? I'm just trying to follow the timeline.
Mr. Hatch's motion, which has received a second, is to postpone this resolution for consideration and disposition until the 7th of April. That would provide comments starting tomorrow. I have received comments and concerns from students that would put the majority of the comment period over spring break. Additionally, our charter does state that 30 days, whenever practical and appropriate. In this case, it is practical. However, the question for the members is it appropriate to shorten the comment period from 30 days down to, I believe, 13 or 14-ish, whereas the 21st would give us 27 or 28 days.
We should vote on the motion and get to the next step, which is partly what you had asked about, but that is part of our discussion. But can we go forward with that?
I have a motion to call a question on voting for
is going to call the questions for a second. Are there those in favor of postponing this and voting on the 7th? All those in favor?
Yeah.
This is a vote.
For the 7th.
All those opposed?
Okay, so I propose that we do it on the
27th.
First. 21st. 21st.
Sorry, 21st.
Is there a second?
The end of the comment. No, we haven't talked about comment period yet. Comment period is...
Mr. Hatch, traditionally the comment period will conclude 1 week before the meeting so that there's that the vice chair, in this case would be me, has the ability to collate the comments and attach them with the read-ahead to all the members. That would be correct.
Okay. Well, I'd like to make a statement at this point, though, that the comment period would be entirely right-written and that there'd be then no public comments literally at the...
Mr. Hatch, I will ask you to withhold that. Right now, we are the motion on the floor for the 21st.
Oh,
has there been a second?
Thank you.
Okay. All those in favor of postponing to the 21st? Those opposed? Those who'd like to abstain? Did someone not vote? So,
that's a statement.
Yes. Okay. So by a vote of 8-0-1, this will be disposed of on April 21st. Moving to discuss the rules of order, it has been requested by sponsors that we, A, proceed to limit debate among members to a reasonable interval. Traditionally, it's been 90 seconds or 2 minutes. To, B, limit the debate and structure it in a way so that it's equitable. We'll have about an hour, perhaps an hour and 15, if we were to compress other agenda items, to discuss the main motion, and when then about 10 or 15 minutes for each side to present their arguments. The final point, which Mr. Hatch has already brought up, would be that we would limit all public comment to written only. In that regard, per Robert's rules, is because that would require suspending a portion of our bylaws, which means that we need to provide advance notice of the exact intent to suspend those rules, so we could not vote on that now. That must be voted on April 7th. That would require a majority of those present.
Thank you. I actually have that the University Assembly represents all constituents in the Cornell community. We have, I'm not sure where it's written, but we have to provide a... We have to provide opportunity for folks who do not have access to computers anytime there is a call for public comment or any sort of communication out like that. Particular sensitivity to staff. So I would strongly encourage you to rethink doing that. It excludes a part of the community that we're not able to participate.
Noting that we are at quorum, and I know that we are considerably over time, I'm going to request that we, being that the portion of not allowing public comment and public speakers at the meeting is slightly contentious, I'm going to ask that we adopt a 2-minute speaking time for the members on the 21st, in addition to 1 hour for the actual debate. And because that requires limiting debate, it's going to require 2/3 majority. I'd like to have that done. If we can have that vote now, before we move into the rest, because I'm concerned we may lose quorum. Because we can't vote to remove public comment until April 7th.
I motion to limit speeches, comments, and et cetera, for members and, if allowed, external community to 2 minutes per individual when debate comes to the floor.
Okay, there's been a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Well, yeah, I have a question about that. Does that involve also the participants in the debate, the responders?
Not, if I may.
Mr. Blair.
In other words, once the resolution needs debate, if the debate is structured for an hour, there would be whatever time frame for the sponsor, time frame for the university, and then the question-comment period to be structured. Okay. It can be or not interactive as members see fit.
Motion and a second. All those in favor, please raise your placards. All those opposed? All those would like to abstain? I saw a hand. Professor Booker, did you register a vote?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry, that's your placard. So in that case, by a vote of 8-0, the debate will be limited to 2 minutes for those who speak in the question and answers part after the main presenters. It will be posted tomorrow, that is correct. It has been entered in the record.
And comments by electronics will be accepted.
We have not, as I stated before, Mr. Hatch, because this requires suspending a portion of our bylaws, we need to provide advance notice. That has been provided now when we will put it out with the agenda. That cannot be voted on until the April 7th meeting per Robert's Rules.
I think we need to
I like how it will be accepted. That is correct. They will start tomorrow.
Well, that could be also in some kind of comment on the resolution as opposed to that.
So, point of clarification, we've lost quorum, but for the speaking privileges, if we're going to limit, so if you, in your package is bylaws 2.6, which explains what the bylaws say. If we're going to suspend this, we have, any of this, we have to put specifically what we want to suspend or, you know, like, first sentence, you know, and that has to go to members in advance and then voted on at December, at the April 7th meeting for it to be official. So we can't come to April 7th going, okay, what do we want to do? It's got to come out in advance. We've lost quorum, so.
Well, in accordance with information, then, no quorum necessary.
Right.
This is going to be worked out by email amongst the various parties involved, right, with you, with the pro tem speaker, right?
That is correct.
That's going to be worked out.
The desire to suspend, and the meeting is adjourned for those who are out here because we are below quorum.
It is 6:29. The meeting is ended.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.